As tends to be the case in a universe apparently ruled by irony, Fedmon Kassad passed unscathed through 97 days of the worst fighting the hegemony had ever seen, only to be wounded 2 days after the last of the ousters had retreated to their fleeing swarmships. He was in the Civic Center building in Buckminster, one of the only 3 buildings left standing in the city, giving curt answers to stupid questions from a world web news steep when a plasma booby trap no larger than a micro switch exploded 15 floors above, blew the news steep and 2 of Kassad's aides through a ventilator grill into the street beyond, and dropped the building on him. Kassad was medevaced to Division HQ, and then farcast to the jump ship now in orbit around Brescia's second moon. There, he was resuscitated and put on full life support while the military brass and hegemony politicians decided what to do with him. Because of the Farcaster connection and the real-time media coverage of Brescia, Colonel Fedmon Kassad had become somewhat of a cause célèbre. Those billions who had been appalled by the unprecedented savagery of the South Brescia campaign would have been pleased to see Kassad court-martialed or tried for war crimes. CEO Gladstone and many others considered Kassad and the other force commanders as saviors. In the end, Kassad was put on a hospital spin ship for the slow trip back to the web. Since most of the physical repair would be done in fugue anyway, it made some sense to let the old hospital ships work on the seriously wounded and the revivable dead. By the time Kassad and the other patients reached the world web, they would be ready for active duty. More importantly, Kassad would have accrued a time debt of at least 18 standard months, and whatever controversy surrounded him might well be over by that time. Kassad awoke to see the dark shape of a woman bending over him. For a second, he was sure that it was she, and then he realized that it was a force medic.
"Am I dead?" he whispered.
"You were. You're on the HS Merrick. You've been through resuscitation and renewal several times, but you probably don't remember because of the fugue hangover. We're ready to start the next step in physical therapy. Do you feel like trying to walk?"
Kassad lifted his arm to cover his eyes. Even through the disorientation of fugue state, he now remembered the painful therapy sessions, the long hours in the RNA virus baths, and the surgery. Most of all, the surgery.
"What's our route?" he asked, still shielding his eyes. "I forget how we're getting back to the web."
The medic smiled as if this were a question he asked each time he came out of fugue. Perhaps it was.
"We'll be putting in at Hyperion and Garden," she said. "We're just entering the orbit of..."
The woman was interrupted by the sound of the end of the world. Great brass trumpets blowing, metal ripping, furies screaming. Kassad rolled off the bed, wrapping the mattress around him as he fell in the 1/6 G. Hurricane winds slid him across the deck and hurled pitchers, trays, bedclothes, books, bodies, metal instruments, and countless other objects at him. Men and women were screaming, their voices rising through falsetto as the air rushed out of the ward. Kassad felt the mattress slam into the wall. He looked out between clenched fists. A meter from him, a football-sized spider with wildly waving legs was trying to force itself into a crack which had suddenly appeared in the bulkhead. The thing's jointless legs seemed to be swatting at the paper and other detritus whirling around it. The spider rotated, and Kassad realized that it was the head of the medic. She had been decapitated in the initial explosion. Her long hair writhed at Kassad's face. Then, the crack widened to the width of a fist, and the head disappeared through it. Kassad pulled himself up just as the boom arm quit spinning and up ceased to be. The only forces now in play were the hurricane winds still flinging everything in the ward toward the cracks and gaps in the bulkhead, and the sickening lurch and tumble of the ship. Kassad swam against it all, pulling himself toward the door to the boom arm corridor, using every handhold he could find,
kicking free the last 5 meters. A metal tray struck him above the eye. A corpse with hemorrhaged eyes almost tumbled him back into the ward. The airtight emergency doors were slamming uselessly into a dead Marine whose space-suited body blocked the seal from closing. Kassad rolled through into the boom arm shaft and pulled the corpse after him. The door sealed behind him. But there was no more air in the shaft than there had been in the ward. Somewhere, a klaxon scream thinned to inaudibility. Kassad also screamed, trying to relieve the pressure so that his lungs and eardrums would not burst. The boom arm was still draining air. He and the corpse were being sucked the 130 meters to the main body of the ship. He and the dead Marine tumbled along the boom arm shaft in a grisly waltz. It took Kassad 20 seconds to slap open the emergency releases on the Marine's suit. Another minute to eject the man's corpse and get his own body in. He was at least 10 centimeters taller than the dead man, and although the suit was built to allow some expansion, it still pinched painfully at his neck and wrists and knees. The helmet squeezed his forehead like a cushioned vise. Gobbets of blood and a moist white material clung to the inside of the visor. The piece of shrapnel which had killed the Marine had left entrance and exit holes, but the suit had done its best to seal itself. Most of the chest lights were red, and the suit did not respond when Kassad ordered it to give a status report, but the rebreather worked, although with a worrying rasp. Kassad tried the suit radio. Nothing. Not even background static. He found the comm log lead, jacked into a hull termix. Nothing. The ship pitched again then, metal reverberating to a succession of blows, and Kassad was thrown against the wall of the boom arm shaft. One of the transport cages tumbled by, its severed cables whipping like the tentacles of an agitated sea anemone. There were corpses in the cage and more bodies tangled along the segments of spiral staircase still intact along the shaft wall. Kassad kicked the remaining distance to the end of the shaft and found all of the airtight doors there sealed. The boom arm shaft itself irised shut. But there were holes in the primary bulkhead large enough to drive a commercial EMV through. The ship lurched again and began to tumble more wildly, imparting complex new Coriolis forces to Kassad and everything else in the shaft. Kassad hung on torn metal and pulled himself through a rent in the triple hull of the HS Merrick. He almost laughed when he saw the interior. Whoever had lanced the old hospital ship had done it right, chopping and stabbing the hull with CPBs until pressure seals failed, self-seal units ruptured, damage control remotes overloaded, and the interior bulkheads collapsed. Then the enemy ship had put missiles into the guts of the Hulk, with warheads of what the Force space people quaintly called canister shot. The effect had been quite similar to setting off an anti-personnel grenade in a crowded rat maze. Lights shone through 1,000 holes, here and there becoming colorful rays where they found a colloidal base in floating haze of dust or blood or lubricant. From where Kassad hung, twisting with the lurch and tumble of the ship, he could see a score or more of bodies, naked and torn, each moving with the deceptive underwater ballet grace of the zero-gravity dead. Most of the corpses floated within their own small solar systems of blood and tissue. Several of them watched Kassad with the cartoon character stares of their pressure-expanded eyes, and seemed to beckon him closer with random, languid movements of arms and hands. Kassad kicked through the wreckage to reach the main drop shaft to the command core. He had seen no weapons. It seemed that no one except the Marine had managed to suit up. But he knew that there would be a weapons locker in the command core, or in the Marine quarters aft. Kassad stopped at the last torn pressure seal and stared. He did laugh this time. Beyond this point, there was no main drop shaft, no aft section. There was no ship. This section, a boom arm and medical ward mod, a ragged chunk of the hull, had been ripped free of the ship as easily as Beowulf had torn the arm from Grendel's body. The final, unsealed doorway to the drop shaft led to open space. Some kilometers away, Kassad could see a dozen other ravaged fragments of the H.S. Merrick tumbling in the glare of sunlight. A green and lapis planet loomed so close that Kassad felt a surge of acrophobia and clung more tightly to the doorframe. Even as he watched, a star moved above the limb of the planet. Laser weapons winked their ruby morse. And a gutted ship section half a kilometer away across the gulf of vacuum from Kassad burst again in a gout of vaporized metal, freezing volatiles and tumbling black specks which Kassad realized were bodies. Kassad pulled himself deeper into the concealing tangle of wreckage and considered his situation. The marine suit could not last more than another hour. Already Kassad could smell the rotten egg's stench of the malfunctioning rebreather. He had seen no airtight compartment or container during his struggle through the wreckage. And even if he found a closet or airlock to shelter in, what then? Kassad did not know if the planet below was Hyperion or Garden, but he was sure that there was no force presence on either world. He was also quite sure that no local defense forces would challenge an ouster warship. It would be days before any patrol craft investigated the wreckage. It was quite possible, Kassad knew, that the orbit of the tumbling piece of junk he now inhabited would decay before they sent anyone up to check on it, sending thousands of tons of twisted metal burning through the atmosphere. The locals would not like that, Kassad knew, but from their point of view, it might be preferable to let a bit of sky fall than to antagonize the ousters. If the planet had primitive orbital defenses or ground-based CPBs, he realized, with a grim smile, it would make more sense for them to blast the wreckage than to fire on the ouster ship. It would make no difference to Kassad. Unless he did something quickly, he would be dead long before the remnants of the ship entered atmosphere or the locals took action. The Marine's amplification shield had been cracked by the shrapnel which had killed him, but now Kassad tugged what was left of the viewplate down over the visor. Telltales winked red, but there was still enough suit power to show the amplified view glowing pale green through the spiderweb of cracks. Kassad watched as the ouster torch ship stood off 100 clicks, its defense fields blurring background stars, and launched several objects. For an instant, Kassad was sure that these were the coup de grace missiles, and he found himself grinning joylessly at the certainty of having only a few seconds to live. Then, he noticed their low velocity and notched the amplification higher. The power lights blinked red and the amplifier failed, but not before Kassad had seen the tapering ovoid shapes, spotted with thrusters and cockpit blisters, each trailing a tangle of 6 jointless manipulator arms. Squids, the Force space people had called the ouster boarding craft. Kassad pulled himself farther back in the wreckage. He had only a few minutes before one or more of the squids reached his piece of the ship. How many ousters would one of those things carry? 10? 20? Kassad was sure that it would be no fewer than 10, and they would be well armed and rigged with infrared and motion sensors. The elite ouster equivalent of Hegemony Space Marines, the commandos would not only have been trained for free-fall combat, but had been born and bred to zero-G. Their long limbs, prehensile toes, and prosthetic tails would be added advantages for this environment, although Kassad doubted that they needed any more advantages than they already had. He began to pull himself carefully back through the labyrinth of twisted metal, fighting the adrenaline fear surge that made him want to kick off screaming through the darkness. What did they want? Prisoners. That would solve his immediate survival problem. All he had to do was survive and surrender. The difficulty with that solution was that Kassad had seen the Force intelligence hollows of the ouster ship they had captured off Brescia. There had been more than 200 prisoners in the storage bay of that ship, and the ousters obviously had many questions for these hegemony citizens. Perhaps they had found it inconvenient to feed and imprison so many, or perhaps it was their basic interrogation policy. But the fact was that the Brescian civilians and captured force troops had been found flayed open and pinned down on steel trays like frogs in a biology lab, their organs bathed with nutrient fluids, arms and legs efficiently amputated, eyes removed, and their minds readied for interrogators' questions with crude cortical comm taps and shunt plugs jacked directly through 3-centimeter holes in the skulls. Kassad pulled himself along, floating through debris and the tangled entrails of the ship's wiring. He felt no inclination whatsoever to surrender. The tumbling hulk vibrated and then steadied some as at least one of the squids attached itself to the hull or bulkhead. "Think," Kassad commanded. He needed a weapon more than a hiding place. Had he seen anything during his crawl through the wreckage that would help him survive? Kassad stopped moving and hung from an exposed section of fiber optic cable while he thought. The medical ward where he had awakened, beds, fugue tanks, intensive care apparatus, most of it expelled through the breaches in the spin mod's hull. Boom arm shaft, elevator cage, corpses on the stairs, no weapons. Most of the bodies had been stripped by the canister shot explosions or sudden decompression. The elevator cables? No, too long, impossible to sever without tools. Tools. He had seen none. The medical offices flayed open along the corridors beyond the main drop shaft. Medical imaging rooms, MRI tanks, and CPD bays flung open like looted sarcophagi. At least one operating room intact, its interior maze of scattered instruments and floating cables. The solarium, scraped clean when the windows exploded outward. Patient lounges, medics lounges, the scrub rooms, corridors, and unidentifiable cubicles. The corpses.